Hi, this is Congressman Bill Huizenga, and we are doing our live telephone town hall meeting. I've just had returned from the Middle East, where I visited Kuwait, Iraq, and Saudi Arabia this end of last week and over the weekend. Got back Monday afternoon. We've been having a series of votes this week, and we are excited to have you all on the line. We've got a growing number of people that are coming onto the conference right now. And if you have a question for me today, press zero. We are also hoping that we can share with you some e-newsletters. This is an email opportunity that does not get shared with anything outside or anything political. This is just for us an official use here in the office. You can press seven if you'd like to join our e-newsletter. And also, you could visit my Facebook page to see the photos of my trip to Kuwait, Iraq, and Saudi Arabia. That's facebook.com/RepHuizenga. That's on our website as well. We have some also on our website. Again, this is Congressman Bill Huizenga calling you this evening for a telephone town hall meeting where we can talk about my trip to the Middle East this past week, where I visited Kuwait, Iraq, and Saudi Arabia, and also any of the other things that we're dealing with right now. We've got obviously quite a bit happening as far as energy. We have quite a bit happening as far as healthcare, as well as jobs. It's a jobs opportunity that Michigan is trying to gain back that is going to really help us out. So again, if you have a question for us tonight, please press zero. For any questions, you'll be connected with one of my staff members. They will then direct you to me. I'll ask you sort of basically what your question's about, and we'll be happy to answer those. We also are taking some comments and questions on Facebook, and we appreciate it. So the purpose of the trip when I went to Kuwait and Iraq and the Middle East is Iraq right now is in a transition. We are transitioning out of the Department of Defense and having it be a military operation to an operation with the Department of State. We had an opportunity to fly in, get a briefing with the Kuwaiti officials, which is basically our base from where we operate in the Middle East. There's a Michigan battalion that had the pleasure of meeting a young man from Michigan who was sent back to receive an award. What they are doing is they're trucking the materials into Iraq and having that switch off happen in the southern part of Iraq. So what we did is we landed in Kuwait, and then the next morning took a C-130into Baghdad International Airport, where we jumped on some Huey helicopters that were supplied by the Department of State, and flew to what had used to be called the Green Zone. They now call the International Zone, and had a series of briefings with the ambassador and Jim Jeffrey is his name, and General Austin, Lloyd Austin, who is the four-star commanding general in Iraq. And we then had an opportunity to have lunch with a number of Iraqi parliamentarians who are there from different parties, dealing with the issues as they're trying to establish and get their feet underneath them as we're pulling out of Iraq. We have gone from 170,000 troops in Iraq down to right around 46,000-47,000. And that is the goal, is to drive that down by the end of the year. Many of them will be replaced with the Department of State employees and contractors. There are a series of, they're called PRTs, or provincial reconstruction teams, around around the country in Iraq. And the idea is that we are going to be working with the Iraqis through the State Department to try to rebuild that infrastructure. A lot of it is having to do with internal security, we can talk about a few of those things. So, again, if you're just joining us, this is Congressman Bill Huizenga, with a live telephone town hall meeting. We just got done voting on the House floor, so we're a few minutes late. We had we're hoping to do this about an hour ago, but we had a series of votes getting ready for reauthorization for the defense bill. And if you have a question, would love to hear from you. Please press zero, and you'll get in a queue. Then also, if you would like to sign up for our e-newsletter, please press seven. And if you're interested in visiting Facebook to see the photos, we have some photos on our website as well. But if you'd like to see photos from my trip to Kuwait and Iraq and Saudi Arabia, please go to facebook.com/RepHeisinger, and you'll be able to see those. So we've got a couple of questions that are coming up, and why don't we go to Matt in Comstock Park. So, Matt, are you there with us?
Yeah. Thank you for doing these, number one. I guess my overall question is what kind of spending cut level or government reforms are you going to be looking forward to pushing for 2012, not this current year, I guess, but I'm not sure in Washington dates how that works, but next year's budget.
Yep. Yeah, right now we are in the 2010-2011 bill. That was the whole fight over the continuing resolution, or the CR, that you may have remembered. That was the $38.5 billion in cuts. I voted no because I didn't believe that it was a good enough faith effort on our part to push it far enough or fast enough as far as the cuts. So what's happening now is the budget process is happening. I'm sure you've heard about the quote-unquote Ryan budget. That's in reference to Paul Ryan, who's chairman of the Budget Committee. That is the House-passed version, the Republican budget that has passed. That is now sitting in the Senate. The Senate voted on that today, where it failed. I believe there were six or seven Republican senators that voted against it as well. Quite honestly, for me, I believe that was a good start. We are just facing down the barrel of a financial gun here that is very daunting. We have $2.8 trillion a year that we are taking in revenue, and this year we're going spending $3.7 trillion. And just to put that in perspective, I talked to a lot of high school kids, and I just did this today, a close-up group from Muskegon, and I said, okay, who here is looking for a summer job? And they all raised their hand. I said, okay, here's the deal. You're going to make $220 a week. Sound all right? Yeah, that sounds okay. I said, but you're going to be spending $370 a week. And they kind of look at you like, well, how do you do that? And I said, now, there might be some reasons. Maybe you're going to be, trying to buy a computer or an iPad, or maybe you're going to try and buy a car. And so maybe you borrow a little money from mom and dad or somebody. My guess is they're going to charge you interest. So you got to pay that back, and you're saving for college. Can you do that if you do that every week, making $220 and spending $370? And the answer, of course, is no. And I said, okay, now add 10 zeros behind that, and you're looking at what our country's dealing with. We take in $2.2 trillion, we're spending $3.7, and it's not just a one-time aberration. It's not just a one-time thing that we haven't been doing this. We've been doing this for a significant amount of time, to the tune of $14 trillion in debt. And we have got to get our spending under control. And I know there's people out there that argue that we need to go out there and raise taxes and increase the revenue. My admonition to that is we haven't even tried the spending cuts. And why would we fund a system that has not driven efficiencies into it? That to me does not make sense, and shouldn't be that first step towards it. We need to make our first step in controlling our spending and driving efficiencies into the program. So specifically, Matt, to answer your questions, I don't think we're going to be able to get aggressive enough. I voted for the Paul Ryan budget. I also voted for the Republican Study Committee budget, which brought us into balance in 10 years. Any of those, and that was a very aggressive budget. Any of the budgets, though, that we're looking at, we are going to have a glide path here. We didn't get into this thing overnight. We're not going to come out of it overnight, and it's going to take not just 1 year of fiscal discipline, but decades of fiscal discipline to get us out of this. So appreciate that call, and we are again. This is Congressman Bill Huizenga on a telephone town hall meeting where we're going to be able to talk about a number of things. One of those things is my trip to the Middle East this past week. I was in Kuwait, in Iraq, while I was in Iraq, we were in Baghdad as well as Kirkuk. Kirkuk is in the northern part of the country. We were there the day after there was three car bombings that were targeted towards the Iraqi police. We met that next morning and had lunch with the general of the Iraqi police in the area, who had lost his top aide in that explosion. It's obviously a very tense and emotional time in Iraq as they're transitioning away from the Department of Defense action to military action to a Department of State action. We are going to have our largest embassy in the world is going to be in Baghdad. The goal is to transition those troops, and I got to tell you, I had an amazing number of experiences with our troops. I got a chance to meet with regular Army from Michigan, some of our National Guardsmen, some of our reserves. These men and women are top notch, and they're doing an amazing job. They're tired, quite honestly. It's been a very busy few years. There's a number of them that have multiple deployments, and it's wearing on them, and we've got to be cognizant of that as well. So we've got a number of questions, and we're going to kind of in this vein. Let's go to Ken in Muskegon. Who's got a question about how we're paying for those wars? And Ken, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a question about financing the wars on foreign soil. It seems
yep.
like whoever says we're going to get involved, they don't come up with any definite ideas on how we're going to pay for these wars. And wars today are pretty expensive, I would say.
They're very.
Budget now?
They are part of the budget. There've been some years where they have pulled things off budget. Quite honestly, I think that's a mistake. That's kind of like saying, well, we're going to have our family budget and we're going to have everything accounted for in that family budget except for the gas that we're putting in the tanks of the cars. You know, it's all the spending that we need to look at. That's one of the reasons, quite honestly, Ken, where I'm concerned about our actions in Libya. What we're doing. There was an article in one of the Washington papers today from a Democrat senator who is the most decorated soldier in Congress right now. He's got two Purple Hearts, two bronze stars, a Silver Star, and his view was using the military has sort of become blasé. It's just like, well, you know, let's just launch a few missiles, let's get some troops in there. And it's become really too easy and too quick. And I would agree, having been there and talking to our troops on the ground, both in Kuwait and Iraq, and having been in Kirkuk, you know, a day after these car bombings happened, we've got a responsibility to look at the actions that we are in and to make sure that we can keep our men and women in uniform as safe as possible with what's going on, and that means we need to be very selective. Now, our problem is we're in Iraq and we're in Afghanistan now, and if we just simply pull out without helping to provide some of that infrastructure, what's going to happen? What's going to fill that vacuum? And that's one of the reasons why there's the transition to the State Department away from the Department of Defense in Iraq. We're seeing that that has been proposed by the president in Afghanistan as well. We've got to be honest. We've got to be upright with and forthright with how those things are being paid for, and we've had a mixed record on that at best. So again, this is Congressman. We appreciate your call, Ken, and appreciate you being on this phone call. This is Congressman Bill Huizenga with a live telephone town hall meeting. Where if you have a question for us, please press zero. You'll be put into a queue. Now, if we are not able to get to your question this evening, please stay on the line. A number of our staff members are here tonight in Washington. They've stayed to be a part of this. They will take your questions. We will get back to you with an answer on those. Also, if you're interested in receiving our e-newsletter, please press 7, and we'll get you on that list. And then if you're interested in seeing the photos from my trip to the Middle East, to Kuwait and Iraq and Saudi Arabia, please visit Facebook and facebook.com/RepHuizenga, and you'll be able to see those. We also have some on our website as well. So with that, we've got Vern who's got a question sort of regarding the Middle East and Israel. And as many of you may know, yesterday Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, addressed a joint session of Congress. He had done so 15 years ago when he was Prime Minister as well at that time. It was fascinating hearing him. So, Vern, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, I think many of us are very concerned with President Obama's stand against Israel, and I just wondered what your feelings were on that.
It was interesting to me that because we were in the Middle East, we were actually in Iraq when the president gave his reaction. And Vern, I'm not sure if we're on speakerphone or what, but I'm hearing an echo back with us. So I think if it's all right with you, Vern, can we take you off of that, and that maybe that'll take care of that echo.
Is that better?
Yeah, I think that is actually a little better.
We've got that
echo going. So, all right. Well, thank you, Vern. So, yes, there is a concern. There's certainly a concern within the Israeli people about what's going on. I do look forward to going to Israel and trying to understand a little more of the geography and what's going on there. Now this is no surprise. The media is not really interested in reporting nuance. I will tell you, when I read through and saw the president interviewed on BBC, we were in Iraq at the time, and saw an interview that he did with BBC, and then also hearing Netanyahu and others at the AIPAC dinner and in his address, the context, the Israelis didn't seem to be reacting as negatively as I had anticipated. Now, in all fairness, I think the president is in a different place where certainly where Benjamin Netanyahu is and a number of others. It's a problem we've been living with for millennia, and I am a supporter of Israel and their ability to exist. I mean, and as Netanyahu pointed out in his speech, the problem is they are still surrounded by neighbors who do not just acknowledge their existence or acknowledge their ability to exist, but who talk about the annihilation of Israel. And that to me is unacceptable. But as Netanyahu said, we need to have peace forged through negotiation, and it has to be both of them bringing it. It can't be imposed. It can't be imposed by us here in the U.S. It has to be done between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and then sort of those ancillary countries outside of that. Certainly Syria and a number of others are interested in just making sure that there's as much conflict as possible in there. And I can tell you, being in three Arab countries, there's a lot of mistrust and distrust of Iran and the actions that they are taking. whether it's in Bahrain or Saudi Arabia or in Iraq. That obviously just lends to the instability in the area. So that is going to be a huge problem for us as we're continuing to go on. All right, I'm trying to go through some of the questions here. And again, this is Congressman Bill Huizenga, who we're doing a live telephone town hall meeting. If you have a question or would like to leave a comment, we would love to hear from you. Please press 0. It'll put you into a queue. And if we aren't able to get to your question this evening live on the call, we have a number of staff people who have stayed this evening, and they will take your question. We'll be able to get back to you. We also offer you an opportunity to get our e-newsletter. You can push 7, and you'll get signed up for that. And then we want to encourage you to go to Facebook and see the photos. We have probably about 40 or 50 photos of my trip to the Middle East on Facebook. It's facebook.com/RepHuizenga, and that's going on. So we're going to shift gears here a little bit, and we're going to talk about some Medicare. And I think Norma, are you on the line with that?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
I was listening tonight to Ron Paul, and he was talking about tapping into Medicare to help the economy, and we have to do it, and it has to be done. I'm questioning, why are we not going across the board? I'm hearing things around here on Medicaid and the misuse of it and the abuse of it and the fun they're having with it, and yet Medicare is the one that's going to be hit. He wants it, and they're really trying to get it through. Is this true? How do you stand on that?
Well, are you talking about Medicaid or Medicare? Medicare is the
Medicare
federal program.
Medicare is the one he's talking about, yes. Medicare, okay. He's talking about.
Yeah.
He said tonight,
and,
unless someone misspoke, but that's what he said.
And I did not hear Ron Paul's, you said it was Ron Paul or Paul Ryan?
I thought it was Ron Paul, but I was running
well
through
be.
The house when I seen him. And
okay.
He was talking about it, but all of a sudden I stopped cold because I thought, what's going on with Medicare?
Sure. All right. Well, let's talk about what happened with the Republican budget that passed, the quote unquote Ron Paul budget. Paul Ryan budget. Now I'm mixing it up, but that Paul Ryan budget. If you are 55 years or older, the system is going to be the same for you. It won't change, and isn't going to change services or processes or any of those types of things. For those that are below 55, there would be changes. And for me at 42, being approximately 25 years away from tapping into it, there's going to be some changes on eligibility, where we look at your income. Which these things have been called for in bipartisan commissions and a number of other things for a number of years, for decades, going back even to the Reagan administration. But there's a looking at sort of means testing it or comparing it to your income. There is discussion about raising that retirement age for eligibility on that. Now, something to remember on that, again, it's not going to affect anybody that's 55 or older. It's then for those of us that are younger than that, it literally goes up like 1 month per year. So it's going to be over a 20-year process, I believe it is, that retirement age would get ratcheted up by 2 years. Those are some of those. And then it would be a program that would allow you to basically have what I have as a federal employee, which is a menu of choices. Now, and for me in West Michigan, my menu of choices is one, Blue Cross Blue Shield. That's the only program that is qualified for any federal employee, not just myself, but my staff and those types of things. And a portion of that would be paid for, and if you were looking for additional coverage beyond that, that would be where it would pay for. So there is no you're seeing, I think, a lot of Norma, I think you're seeing a lot of sort of Metascare tactics. I saw a poster that was put up of visuals being talked about, you know, pushing old people over the cliff and all these other things. And it's just, it's unfortunate that we can't have a fact-based, rational conversation about a system that the Medicare trustees have said is going broke, and they said it's going to be broke. In fact, they just had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and they moved the date up by 5 years, from 2029 to 2024. And 2024 is only 13 years away. That is not that far away. And we have got to do something about this. We know that the three largest drivers of long-term budgets are Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And the fourth one right now is our defense spending, which goes to one of our questions earlier. But the fifth one, which is very soon to become the fourth one, is paying interest on our debt. And so that to me just screams for the fact that we need to get our spending under control. And there are ways to do that without harming the programs. You know, the program has fundamentally been changed under Obamacare. That's a vision and a direction I don't want to go. They've said that they are going to be taking $500 billion away from the providers, from doctors and hospitals to pay for it. I think that's a mistake, and so we're offering an alternative. So hopefully that answers your questions a bit, and we appreciate you asking that. So we have some Facebook questions. I guess Karen in Allendale, and then we've got some questions on Facebook about education funding. So. Karen, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Karen.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Yes.
Appreciate being on this tonight. So go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to know the correlation between what's happening with the federal spending and the federal just the spending. Concerning here in Michigan, the Governor Snyder has just signed his bills, and it's supposed to go in, and I heard an announcer tonight say if the paperwork can be printed out fast enough that he may sign it tomorrow night, and everything is being pushed through so fast that who knows what is really being done, with especially with the children, as far as their education, as far as the teachers. He says that he wants to help the children, but yet take away the teachers. And the federal, I'm hearing about the same thing with Obama. So I don't know. I just really don't know. I'm really scared about this issue.
Great. Well, we can talk a little bit about that. And thank you very much for your call, and for those of you on Facebook as well who had some questions about that. Well, you have to remember, Karen, first of all, I'd encourage you to give a call to your state senator and your state representative. Your state senator is Arlen Meekoff. And depending on where exactly in Allendale, it should be Amanda Price, who is your state representative. Vast majority of local school funding comes directly from the state of Michigan. The bits that come from the federal government have to do typically with programs such as free and reduced lunch and some of the titled programs with reading and some of those things, but they tend to be pretty small portions of the local school budgets. The vast majority of it is the per pupil funding, and I dealt with that when I was a state representative from the Holland, Zeeland, Hudsonville area. I spent 6 years in the state house, and it is very difficult. There is no more difficult vote in my mind than doing what's called a reverse appropriation. That's when we would set out a budget, and 6 months into it, we would get a revenue estimation that would say the state has taken in even less money than what we had planned. We would then have to go to the Department of Education or Department of Transportation or the Department of Health and Human Services and say, sorry, Mr. or Mrs. Director, we have to take a portion of your budget away. And we went through a number of those cuts already. The key to this, quite honestly, Karen, is jobs. It's getting people back to work to help create that revenue so that they are spending their dollars and purchasing things, which will then help increase the state sales tax, the income tax, obviously, that comes from that. And we have to go cautiously. I know school districts are having some very difficult choices to be made. We've lost population in most districts, or not most, but in a number of districts. They have lost student population as well, and they are going through a very difficult process of paring back some of the services in these districts. And we have to keep the kids in the front of mind. To me, it's not nearly as much about the administrators or the buildings or, frankly, even the teachers as it is the students. We've got to make sure that we are servicing those students and driving dollars into the classroom. I don't believe some of the federal programs and some of the federal policies are helping that. And there's going to be a reauthorization of No Child Left Behind. And then, of course, there was the President Obama's program, Race to the Top. I'm not a fan of those. I think we need to have local control, and we need to make sure that schools have the tools that they need to supply those educations. But that is going to be primarily an issue that the state is going to be wrestling with. So we do appreciate that that your call on that. So we've got a couple of minutes here yet that we're going to have. And so if you've been joining us, we are here doing a telephone town hall meeting. This is Congressman Bill Huizenga. We just want to encourage you, if you're interested in getting our e-newsletter, please press 7. I recently returned, this past Monday afternoon, from the Middle East, where I was in Kuwait, Iraq, and Saudi Arabia, visiting our troops in Iraq and our State Department people. I had an opportunity to meet with a number of Michigan-based soldiers who grew up here, some National Guardsmen and women as well, at the embassy and in Baghdad, met with a number of linguist experts, had an opportunity to spend some time with them and break bread with a number of them. And I got to tell you, our men and women in uniform are second to none. I came away very impressed, and not just impressed with our soldiers and airmen, but also with their leadership under General Austin, who's the 4-star general in command of Iraq. His deputy commanding generals and really right on down the line. These are people that have a solid understanding of the context and the history, what they're dealing with. They've been able to connect locally in so many ways and really are building some relationships. And we've got to make sure that as this transition is happening in Iraq and as it's sort of the planned transition in Afghanistan as well, that they are supported in ways that allows them to to stand on their own, to be on their own 2 feet, which is the goal here. We've got to make sure that their oil reserves are used properly. We've got to make sure that they've got access to it. They need internal security for that as well. And as soon as they have those revenues coming, that is going to dramatically help all of their services as well. There's talking with our men and women on the ground there. They believe that there is significant progress that has been made. We were traveling with a colonel who is now a liaison here in Congress, who had 2 tours in Iraq that bookended 2 tours in Afghanistan. He was in Iraq in 2003, and then he was in Iraq again in 2008, 2009. He it was interesting. He kept commenting on the uniforms of the Iraqis, and he kind of later explained, and along with a couple of the other guys, they said there's now become a real pride in the uniform, both for the police and for the Iraqi security forces. And they used to not wear their uniforms, partially because they were targets. They have really tried to battle the corruption. They've really tried to go after sort of that sense of pride. And they've standardized the uniforms. It's small little things that we don't think of, but they said kind of one of the signs of maybe some corruption happening is you would see somebody in a uniform with, like, nice Italian-made loafers for shoes, you know, and those kinds of things, and so they're really battling against that, trying to professionalize the whole program. So we are definitely proud of them. We want them home. We want to make sure that that they have the ability and the equipment to fulfill their needs, but that we're also doing it in an efficient, effective manner that's going to allow the Iraqis to stand on their own here in the very near future. So. We've got a chance to have about two more questions here before we're going to be running out of time, and we appreciate that. So we've got some questions about we're trying to flip through. I'm trying to flip through the questions here. I think we had somebody about a couple of people asking about the Patriot Act. Abby, I don't know if you are there with us. Abby,
yes,
are you there?
Yes, this is Abby. I am.
Yep.
Hi.
I think you and I maybe met at an Allendale dinner or an Allegan dinner.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Go ahead with your question. Yep, go ahead.
Okay. My concern about the Patriot Act kind of stems from different articles I've read. There was a good one in the Washington Post today about Ron Paul and Justin Amash. Kind of, both the House and the Senate have been faced with the renewal of the Patriot Act, and I do have the same Fourth Amendment concerns that they voice. What's your position on that?
Yeah, well, and just so everybody's aware, the Patriot Act is due to expire at midnight this Friday, and the Senate has been going through a series of things. Rand Paul, the son of Ron Paul, has been dealing with some issues in the Senate. And Abby, I think sort of a little bit as you and I had talked about at the dinner, I am concerned and cautious about what we are doing. But I know in my conversations that I've had with former Congressman Hoekstra when he was going through this and dealing with it. I just had a conversation with Mike Rogers, who's the chairman of the Intelligence Committee here from Michigan today. He and I had an opportunity to chat about it. I'm trying to get some more information as diving deep into it. I know that Representative Amash and I have talked about it briefly as well, and I intend to talk to him a little more. I am less concerned about some of the issues that he is. While I am concerned about Fourth Amendment and the Act of Privacy, I do believe that my experience with Pete Hoekstra and what he's been doing, he has had a number of those same concerns. He believes that those have been addressed. Mike Rogers believes that a number of those have been addressed. And whether it's the FISA court, which is the court that they would go into for trying to deal with wiretaps and those kinds of things, it's really about making sure that we have insulation for the American people and security for the American people. But if we've got foreign potential terrorists calling, for example, calling into the United States, having an ability to follow them, and so for non-U.S. citizens, that's where maybe we part ways a little bit. I'm less concerned about protecting non-U.S. citizens than I am about protecting U.S. citizens. We've got to make sure that our citizens are protected and their privacy is reasonably protected as well. So we're going to be taking a look at that, Abby. And I appreciate your question. It's a very timely question Haven't had a chance to read that Washington Post article yet today, but we'll be doing that this evening. That's part of my evening regimen as I go over a number of the papers here, try to get that information. And it's very timely. We are dealing with it this week, and appreciate your thoughts on that. So I think we've got time for one more question, and we've got a whole series of them. Some about Social Security, some about corporate taxes, oil companies, and from some foreign aid. There are some things regarding foreign aid. So why don't we this will maybe kind of hit a couple of issues. Fred, if you are were there, we're going to get you in the line here. Fred from Manistee, go ahead. Are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
All right, great. Thanks for calling in tonight. And, go ahead.
Yes, my question is we're cutting back on Medicare and all this, but yet we borrow from China millions and billions of dollars given to these foreign countries, and why are we doing it?
Yep. Well, first let me acknowledge you're absolutely right. We are borrowing those dollars predominantly from China. They are our largest debt holder. We are, for every dollar that we are spending, 42 cents of that dollar is borrowed money. And we clearly cannot do it and continue to do that. Now, for your Medicare concern, again, if you were on the line, maybe you were earlier when we had a question about that, Medicare is not going to be changing for anybody 55 or older. None of the healthcare programs that we're dealing with right now are going to be changing under the House budget, under the Republican budget that had been passed. We are talking about changes for people like myself who at 42 have some time to change and get some other things lined up. But we have our biggest threat to our security is that debt right now. We have got to take care of that. And it is a negligence on our part. It's irresponsible if we do not. This is about jobs. How we are going to make sure that we tackle this is creating an atmosphere that's going to allow for job creation, and that comes through the private sector. And one of those main things that we have to do is get our debt under control. It's interesting. When I was overseas, we met with a couple of the oil ministers, one from Iraq, one from Saudi Arabia. The minister Sharistani he's also the deputy prime minister in Iraq, Western educated, actually educated here in the United States, has his PhD, he's a geologist, we were talking about oil and the price of oil and what Iraq was able to do to put oil on the market. And he was asked about gas prices, and he said, "Yes, you know, we understand, and we've been. It doesn't appear that there is an issue with supply. It appears that there's an issue dealing with speculators and what's been happening in that market." And I asked him. I said, "Well, I sit on the financial services market, and a couple of my subcommittees are on domestic monetary policy and international monetary policy. I'm curious." Have you looked at what we have done with the U.S. dollar, inflating the U.S. dollar? Because oil is only bought and paid for in U.S. dollars, and I said, I'm concerned that that has driven up the price artificially. And he kind of paused, and he smiled at me. He said, I was trying to be polite. I didn't want to bring that up. And I said, you know, quite honestly, Mr. Minister, it's fine that you do, because we've got to face this. And again, part of that is our borrowing. We have really been cheating ourselves because we've eroded our purchasing power and we've eroded our savings by inflating our dollar so dramatically. Now, the last thing I'd like to comment on is the aid to foreign countries. The aid, and they've done polling on this, whether it's Tea Parties, Tea Party-minded people, or whether it's social and fiscal liberals, the polling will suggest that most people believe if we cut out earmarks and cut out foreign aid, we'd be able to balance our budget. And unfortunately, that's not the case. Those two things combined represent less than 1% of our spending. Now, I'm not saying that we can't and shouldn't get wiser and better at how we spend our dollars overseas and whether we should or shouldn't. I have voted on a number of programs to cut State Department programs and to scale back our spending overseas. I believe we've got a responsibility to deal with the domestic first and foremost, but we also have some friendships that we have to go and deal with, some things that we have, we've got to do some cleanup, in my opinion, whether it's in Iraq or Afghanistan, and there's going to be some areas of aid that we have to provide, but those are relatively small items. I understand, though, billions of dollars, and a billion is a billion. Any way you cut it, that's a lot of money, and we've got to make sure that we are putting the American people first and those foreign situations second. You can count on us continuing to do that. So, well, again, this was Congressman Bill Huizenga, and I appreciate you being on the line with us. We had right around about 9,500 people that were a part of this evening. We appreciate you being willing to be a part of that. We'd love to have you involved with our e-newsletter. You can push 7 at any time. That'll get you onto our e-newsletter. And remember, please visit our Facebook page or our website, and you can see photos from my trip to the Middle East and with some of our soldiers and men and women in uniform. And I hope you have a great night. We appreciate your time. So thanks, and we'll talk to you again soon.